Welcome to the podcast From Plow to Plate with founder and farmer Sam Lucy, who alongside his wife Brooke operate Bluebird Grain Farms in the Metow Valley in north central Washington State, growing, processing, and marketing organic grains.
All right, it's time for another issue of From Plow to Plate. This is a little bit different one we've got here, Sam. And this is with, would you call him your mentor, Blaine?
Blaine is definitely one of my mentors.
He was so...
One of my very few, actually.
Well, I'm glad you're teachable. And when was he in? Was he in the spring, last spring?
He was in on the day, I think, the mercury hit 113.
Oh, that's right, that really
in
hot.
In June, right at the end of June, because I remember we left here and went immediately to the tap house where it was cool mm-hmm. and we could get something to drink.
Yeah, yeah.
You might not remember that, Don.
Well, no, now that you mention it, I do, but... I had so much fun meeting him.
He was really curious about you and this voice next to mine. And so that was how I ended up calling you and saying, hey, Don, Blaine's in town. He really wants to meet you.
He had come up in conversation many times before. This guy lives out in the Dakotas. It's where you were getting your emmer seed. And
I was needing to back up my supply of emmer.
Okay.
That's how I definitely first connected with Blaine, who is one of the godfathers of regenerative ag. There is a true meaning to regenerative, and this is going to be talked about a lot more and more. This is the buzzword now, even though Blaine and some other folks have been doing this 20-some years. We talked about it the other day. Regenerative means essentially bringing nothing into your farm from the outside. In layman's terms, that means you grow all your nutrition on your farm. So that it means a big enough crop rotation to grow different species of plants to continually keep building the nutrients in your soil and, of course, closing the carbon cycle. So in this podcast, Blaine will explain how he does that. And essentially, regenerative ag lends itself to minimal tillage.
Okay.
So you are not releasing carbon from the soil. You are keeping it in the soil. You're not even trying to recapture it. Mm-hmm. You're just trying to keep it there.
Okay.
Meanwhile, growing the nutrients. So you're not bringing in mineral or whatever amount of fertilizers you need to keep your soil sustained. Regenerative agriculture at its best replenishes the soil and then some without losing anything. Mm-hmm. So as you take, you're not really taking because you're replenishing it, but you have to have a big land mass to have that big of a rotation to grow, you know, large scale operation. One of the restrictions I've had here is just not having enough land to do the multi-rotation I would like to do. So with other growers on board with Bluebird now, such as Blaine, we are very particular about taking on partners who are growing in a regenerative manner. And we have three other partners now that are. So they're growing under the food system that's not only giving us the high-quality food, but we salute their practices in taking care of the countryside, which was the premise of Bluebird Grain Farms to start with. So we're kind of expanding our radius here to support this type of agriculture, which I feel is paramount in today's world where we're running out of water, we're running, you know, running out of resources.
Yeah.
And so let's do more with less.
All right. So I hope everybody has the time to listen to this from front to back because it's super interesting. Like Sam's explaining, Blaine has a large farm. He has a very intimate relationship with the plants and the soil that he's putting them in. And it's a big rotation of these things, like Sam's saying, to regenerate and keep the soil growing on its own, kind of with these plants instead of plows. So pretty darn interesting.
How are you doing, Blaine?
Good.
And tell me how you pronounce your name again.
Blaine Schmalz.
And you're from the Dakotas, is that correct?
Yep, Rugby, North Dakota, the geographical center of North America.
You know Sam from emmer growing, correct?
Absolutely.
Yeah?
Yep.
How did that happen? How did you guys meet each other?
Well, it happened because I had grown the emmer here for 10 years. I knew they were kind of doing the emmer project out in North Dakota. Blaine was the only one that called me back, and he called me back within a day or two. He said, oh, I hear you're looking for emmer. But I wanted to go see his farm before I got any of his emmer and see what he was up to out there. Drove all the way up to North Dakota and had a great visit and saw his amazing farm.
So let's talk about that. Now, I know you've got a lot of acreage, 5,000 acres, you said?
Yeah, not all of it is farmland. Uh-huh. There are grazing lands also on that. We're on the Great Plains. Yeah. It's very flat. We don't have irrigation water where we're at. We do have aquifers under some of our property, but it is not on soil types that are conducive to raising a good crop all the time because of the water settling and creating bigger saline seeps.
Okay.
Yep. So it's basically about thin soils.
So I'm curious, what kind of equipment do you
So we use? Try not to till. In the organic production system, it's really difficult. Unlike Sam, where he has irrigation water, he's going to make it wet. He's going to help propagate the weeds, or as I like to call them, plants out of place. If we do any tillage, we'll do shallow blade undercutting so that the plant material that is either killed at that time or if in case it's harvested stubble, lays there for protection. And we've kind of upped our game in the last 20 years of learning how to basically introduce some of the crops like we're going to talk about today to give us some liliopathy to help address some of the soil deficiencies. That's a whole topic, and I don't know where you want to go with that. But
well, I want to stop you right there and go, okay. I want to know what liliopathy is.
Liliopathy is a plant's ability to basically sterilize the soil around it so that it doesn't allow other weeds or plants out of place to grow around it. And it can last for varying degrees by plant type. We, along with using emmer, one of our favorite, I like to call them heritage grains because they were from my heritage. The emmer, unlike the rye, doesn't become a hindrance in years to follow on crops. The rye has a little bit stronger straw, so it lasts a bit longer. But the emmer is real mineral dense, and biology likes to decompose it whenever they can have access to it. So they use that. But the liliopathy extends past the year we grow the crop. It's into the next year. So we use crops like emmer to basically not sterilize the soil 100%. You can't do that. But basically, with the huge weed reduction we have, we can grow very gentle crops like peas, which are take about 28 days to get up to where they're viable and can do any shading on the ground. We can actually get a pea crop started without weeds coming in until later on. And so we take that another step because when I said we don't want to use much tillage with these crops that are liliopathy, we address a lot of our weed things that we need to do when the crop is actually on its way to maturing. We use something that was made in Sweden called a comb cut. And it's just some knives that go in and cut all your hollow-stemmed weeds, you know, your thistles and your mustards, pigweed, that kind of thing. And so we address it unlike having tillage because we don't want erosion on our soil. We're very windswept out on the prairies. And we also need to collect whatever moisture we get from whether it's the snow or any precipitation, and we do not want to have bare soil.
Yeah.
This method, it also allows us an earlier plant date for the following crop, because unlike the prairie grasses, which wave in the wind and allow the early spring suns, the straw material starts to decompose, so it's not this strong, bright straw anymore. It's more dark, and that dark lets the sun, moisture goes down, snow goes down. It's the first land we get on. And most people would think, well, you'll never get back on that land. We've learned much different.
Couple things I wanted Blaine to maybe talk about was, one, the emmer, since that's how we met, why he really likes that for his farm, because he wants to keep growing emmer for a different reason than I want the emmer. He wants it for his agronomical scene. I want the emmer because it's nutritious food. his use of it is different than mine, where I'm processing it and, you know, bagging it and trying to get good nutrient-dense food out there.
The emmer that you end up producing goes to seed primarily. Is that correct, Blaine?
Yes, but we also use it for cover crop and for forage for livestock.
I'm guessing that there would be no typical rotation for you. You read the environment, read the soil, read the weather. Each year it could be varying.
How did you know how to ask that question? That is so important. We have criteria for the organic certification that we have to have a certain rotation that we follow.
Oh.
But you can do it with varied crops. But you're absolutely right. I probably was one of the first ones to develop grass seedings out there with something called a sculptured seeding method. And I had the ARS, the Agriculture Resource Service, help me, because I needed to know about grasses and how they would respond to certain soil types. We have actually turned our farm into sculptured seedings. We address the weed composition that may be out there. Mm-hmm. Certain crops do certain things. Like the emmer, you asked me, one of the attractions of the emmer is it's a very regenerative crop. Not only with the allelopathy that we talked about before, it's a nutrient-dense crop. And that's what I want to give to Sam. And you say, well, I got really thin soils from eons of time, have tied up minerals in those soils. And emmer is one of those crops that's able to go ahead and retrieve those and regeneratively put them back so they're usable for the next crop and its crop itself. Mm. But I also put it in if it's really thin, sandy soils or something like that, I need a lot of straw cover, so I would use it there. I may use it if I'm going to graze livestock, because they like the 14-hand tall emmer straw, too.
I'll bet.
And by the way, emmer straw, the nutrition that's in emmer, almost in the straw, equals what the grain itself provides. And that's a real rarity. We've done a lot of testing with it. It has basically almost the equal mineral content for what you may call the fodder as it does the seed itself. So that's regenerative. I'm putting it back into the land in a way that the following crops can use it.
They're dense naturally, and that's what we...
All the way down the stalk.
We had talked about earlier in one of our... about modern wheat breeders have said how the ancient heritage wheats, emmer, einkorn, spelt, are insufficient. You know, they're more susceptible to disease. They're more susceptible to not doing well in drought and all this stuff that they get paid a lot of money to breed plants to withstand. And I think Blaine can attest to the fact it's actually the opposite. These plants not only withstand adverse conditions much better than the modern wheats, I would say, but they naturally come with that makeup that used to be in wheat. The amino acids, the high sugars, the high proteins. I think I've mentioned before, of all the flours that we mill, we have to be the most careful milling the emmer flour, because it has the oils in it, the sugars, and so it can blind up our screens. We can plug things up with it because it's got so much to it. Mm-hmm. Whereas a soft white wheat or something, or rye even, just boom, you know, just blows through the mill like nothing.
But if you think about the future and what you want to base it on, I would say robust, healthy, just adaptive grains is the way to go.
Well, and so one thing that Blaine brought up and I think is really important, and a lot of us might agree, that on the menu for the near term is a lot of heat and not maybe so much water.
So
we have to rethink our food systems. How are we going to use these resources to grow what is most adaptive and least resource intensive? And I think that is the cornerstone of regenerative agriculture. Mm-hmm. There again, this isn't from a professor's standpoint or a consumer standpoint. We're talking about the farming standpoint, and that's where Blaine, having visited his farm, he's done this in extreme conditions.
A lot of people ask me, well, how do you decide what you're going to do during the day? Mm-hmm. And you sort of brought it up, like you're going to, you know, you're not going to just seed a crop because that's what you're going to do. I get up in the morning, and I do walk across every piece of land that we're going to do some kind of production system on that day.
Yeah.
And I can tell you this, Don, very seldom was it the same thing that I'm going to do as was on my drawing board at home in the office. Uh-huh. My son will attest to that. He says, Dad, why do you even do the plans? He says, you're
because it's fun to think about.
Well, it, I said, you got to have plan A, B, and C.
Yeah, yeah.
He says, but you're doing D, E, and F. Yeah.
Well, this is another part of this question, because I wonder what motivates you guys, you know, that you didn't go just down the garden path with commercial ag.
That's the difference between a lab and the field.
Yeah. Yes, but there's got to be some sort of a guiding light inside of you that wants to do it this way, because mm-hmm. there's no industry to, you know, tell you what's coming next. You're yeah. interpreting out there for yourself.
What I realized myself was that I was raising food, not a commodity.
Yeah.
And when I come to that realization that someone's child, his future on his mineralization of his body was going to determine if he was going to be healthy or not. And I can honestly say that was one of the attributes of me raising a heritage grain when I found out that their conversion, their availability to retrieve and utilize minerals. Mm-hmm. Minerals mean health. And we sit in North Dakota with high calcium mm-hmm. soils, high selenium soils. So calcium is the mother load of what determines everything. It's calcium.
Yeah, we've talked about
and
that.
And selenium is really important too. So, but there's no crops that we were raising that were taking and retrieving those minerals and putting it into the food production system. So when I realized that, it brought tears to my eyes.
Yeah.
There were many other factors along with that. And then when I realized that water's going to be an issue forever in this country, and if I can raise a cereal crop that takes much less water than a competing cereal crop, that got my attention. If I can raise a crop that can retrieve minerals out of the soil and convert it into healthy food, and I don't need to add amendments every time I turn around, mm-hmm. I'm interested in that. If I raise a crop that can cover the land and prevent erosion, I'm all in. From a farmer perspective also, that has I'm 62, almost 3. My son is 27, so a huge spread. I will keep doing this because my son says to me, he says, Dad, at the end of the day, you feel good about what you did, didn't you?
Yeah.
There you go.
Yeah. You nailed it. You know, we're going to keep doing it regardless. You and I are. But we're talking about generations. I want to ask Blaine, because you've done both. You did grow conventionally for many years, and I want to know, how'd you get there?
1993, and I had a harvest business, and I was farming on the side. The whole farming thing had changed, because they never used to use pre-harvest or burn-down chemicals to basically premature ripen the wheat. So they started to do more of a monocrop. They used to graze the wheat in the Kansas-Oklahoma belt that I combined in. And so we had grass-fed beef. So they had a fertility program in place automatically. But it was in the late 70s before they even started doing any fertilization because they used to get the freezing and thawing in the ground, and with the livestock running in the ground, we used to combine and harvest 50 bushel wheat every time, anytime, any year, as long as it never got hailed out or they weren't in some extreme drought. We were always combining great wheat. And I was jealous. I was farming in Dakotas. We had a hard time with 30 bushel, you know, on a good year. And so things had happened. I had a bunch of machines, and this sort of was a fault of mine. I would never let the men do the final clean out on any of the machinery. So I had 4 or 5 combines. I'd be up early in the morning, and before we'd move to the next job. And there was a breakdown in my system. It started because the production system changed. The wheat had never really changed to that point, but it was more the production system. So I had a breakdown in my system. 1993, I'm doing a herbicide the fall of the year. All I do is stick my head in a tank, take a look around. I wake up 4 hours later, and I'm getting hauled by the neighbor to the emergency room. Mm. But I had slowly had this breakdown. It was just, I was toxic because of my occupation of conventional farming and the changes that happened. I even remember the chemical that I was using. So anyway, I had a breakdown system, spent a lot of time at the heart and lung clinics, and I had to look at my wife and tell her that, you know, I'm sorry I brought you to farming because you had a good job. You were raising children. We borrowed to buy land. We borrowed for input. We borrowed to buy equipment. There was no return. And here I am, basically a man that couldn't perform. I had a doctor. He basically said to me, he says, what do you do? I said, well, I'm a farmer. A farmer, he said. Yes. And he said, what are you taking? And so I had other doctors prescribe different pills, and he took them. I still remember. Threw them, smashed them against the wall. He said, that's not your problem. He says, your problem is what you do. And that was right then and there. We had to make a change, but I had to get healthy first. And so the whole thing happened out of design, not out of default, that I became an organic farmer.
Oh, what a good story. I mean,
thank you.
I feel for you. Have you recovered completely? Do you carry on?
Some of it you carry to your grave.
Yeah.
You know?
That's interesting. You know, I mean, you're talking about making soil that's friendly to these plants, which also kind of extends to the animal kingdom around as well.
Yeah, we've learned. We watch the animals because you cannot fool an animal on health.
Interesting.
It's unbelievable.
That's a good point.
That's a nice little picture, I think, for the consumer to realize that these are friendly farms all the way around, you know.
Friendly. Well, the birds and the bees count, and if you go to a field and you could go to too many of them, it's just dead quiet.
Yeah.
Emphasis on dead.
Yeah.
That's what you see across the landscape.
There's books called The Silent Spring.
Oh, yeah. Rachel Carson. Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, we're driving forth. It's been real fun to have Blaine here. And
I'll say I'm so glad you came in. I'm glad
you
found
Don.
The time.
Thank you, Sam.
We need to take all this work that he and I and other good growers have done and keep it intact till it becomes food.
Yeah. I think we have now covered regenerative, and I am super interested to get into what all is going into that big building that you've been working on the last little while, all the processing, packaging, and all that, which is what's coming up, right?
Yeah, we're very excited.
Yeah.
Very excited.
It's a great new day for farmers.
Bluebird Grain Farms, your source for the finest 100% certified organic ancient grains, fresh milled flour, and whole grain handcrafted blends. Bluebird's products are sown, harvested, and sun-cured with care and milled to order on the farm here in the Medow Valley in northern Washington so that you can enjoy the most delicious plow-to-package grain that money can buy. Check out the website, www.bluebirdgrainfarms.com, where you can learn more about their farming practices and shop on their online retail store for ancient grain products, local honey, sourdough starters, monthly grain CSA subscriptions, gift boxes, and more. That's BluebirdGrainFarm.com.